Bonjour, this is Catherine Spires. You're listening to Smart Mouth. We are on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast and on Facebook in a secret group. You just have to search for Smart Mouth. I want to see your food photos. We are also on Patreon at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. I added some different tiers recently, so you can go check those out. And to pull back the curtain on this show, I think this summer I'm going to take a 2-month hiatus and maybe air some reruns during that time. And I will also be starting the Smart Mouth newsletter. There. If I say it, then I have to do it. On to listener call-ins. The voicemail number is 209-566-2253. Call in and tell me who you think I should try to get as a guest for Smart Mouth. Please remember to enunciate the person's name. Here's one message I got.
Hi, this is Matthew leaving a message for Smart Mouth. I'd like to recommend Lin Chen, the actress and food blogger, and I guess she does a lot of other stuff. For an episode. She's really cool and friendly, and she seems really into food, and I think it'd be a great episode.
Lin Chen used to have a blog and also a podcast called The Actor's Diet, and she's here in LA, and we've been in each other's orbits for years. So you're right. I should have her on the show. Again, if you want to call in, it's 209-566-2253. This week's guest is Vanessa Lavorato. She runs a cannabis chocolates company called Marigold Sweets, and she's on a show called Bong Appetit. Do you get it? Bong Appetit. It is on Viceland. If you don't have that network, I think I've actually seen the show on Hulu, so there's another option. Vanessa has a lot of insider information about cannabis edibles and the business thereof. But before we get to that point, I'm starting this episode right smack dab in the middle of a discussion about Vanessa's early restaurant work. Enjoy! A chef, I want to open a restaurant. I'm like, well, the reality of it is not as glamorous as it seems. So
seriously, it seems really sweaty.
It is. Yeah. It's fun. It's a lot of cleaning, you know, a lot of cleanup.
Yeah. So you have to go through all the steps. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like, the stereotype about a restaurant kitchen is that there's a lot of shouting and screaming. And that would get you sweaty too.
I was really lucky that when I was in Rome, they were generally pretty nice. The first day I talk a lot. So you're like, yes.
That's good for podcasts.
Right. The first day I was like nose and tailing some green beans and I had to do a whole like case of them for dinner. So I had a cup like needed to be done in an hour.
Nose and
I
was tailing. Yeah. I've never heard that phrase used that way. I love it.
Anyway, I'm probably saying it wrong.
No, it's cute.
But it was like it was just a big task to undertake and I was just kind of like, you know, doing it like I would at home with my grandma, mm-hmm. just like very casual.
Yeah.
And then the chef came over and he was like, listen, you need to shut the fuck up. I was like, okay. And I finished it and I learned my lesson. But for the most part, they were really encouraging. And like, you know, I came in not having worked in professional kitchens before. Mm-hmm. And as like a food writer and wanting to know more about what I was doing and like what I was writing about, the food I was eating. And they welcomed me. So I thought it was really cool to have that opportunity.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
So you grew up in California. Mm-hmm. You went to college in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And then was it while you were still in college that you went to Rome?
No, it was after college.
Okay.
Yeah. I went later. When I was in college, I mean, I was working through school. I didn't really have the extra funds necessary to travel.
You weren't one of the fancy study abroad kids.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was like very jealous of them because they'd come back from Italy and I was a double major in Italian studies. And so I could write like a, you know, however long page thesis on Boccaccio, but I couldn't speak. Like it's a different part of your brain, the conversational versus like writing. So, but then when I went to Italy and I did the program in Rome and I spent some time with my family in Calabria, it just like, it was easier for me to pick it up. And I know like the grammar I learned was useful. So
I love Italian still. And I have my textbook right there because about once a year I'll be like, I should I should brush up on my Italian, and I never do.
No? No. You have to go there, drink a little bit of wine. All of a sudden, you speak it. It's well, really
yeah, it's funny. On my last trip there, we actually got robbed.
Oh,
and
no.
I went and like reported it to the cops. And as I was talking to the police officer, I was like, I'm speaking Italian. This is like working.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I remember more than I thought I did.
In that necessity, you know?
Yeah.
I think that we hold ourselves back when we speak a language because we're so concerned with making a mistake that yes. you can't be candid. So
how yeah. is your Italian when you're high?
Not great.
Oh, really?
It's not. I mean,
how's your English when you're high?
Watch the show. You'll find out Tuesdays at 9 on Viceland.
Good job. Your publicist is pleased. So the show is called Bong Appetit, which is funny because I feel like it's a smart name and also an extremely high name.
Yeah, it's both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that a smart stoned person would come up with.
Definitely. The executive producers, Chris Grosso and Lauren Cinnamon, are like the genius behind it, you know, and like how it's evolved from being an online show to the first two seasons on Viceland and then now as a competition format. It's just the name is so versatile, you mm-hmm. know, and I think it really captures the cannabis industry as well as like culinary. And so what ends up happening are like grandmas end up watching the show because they don't register that it's Bong Appetit. They think they're watching like, and then, you know, they see us in the kitchen with the chefs and like, oh, this is great. The food looks good. Yeah. The food captures you.
And it and is then, also a lot of chefs that people who watch food television will recognize.
Right.
Like Top Chef and
right.
whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Top Chef episode was really fun. Like Dale with his Gucci loafers. Oh my God. He was really funny. They hadn't cooked with weed before. Mm-hmm. And then one episode we had all the chefs had cooked with weed before. So, okay. you know, we wanted to show people who are experienced and people who are not. It just sometimes it ended up that they had made brownies in high school. So they had like some experience, right. but weren't seasoned like the cannabis chefs.
Yes.
So.
Okay. That makes sense. So. Let's talk about your cannabis connection. You have a company called Marigold Sweets.
Yes.
And I was writing in my notes, I was like, it's a chocolate company. No, it's a confectionery. And then I was like, wait, are you a chocolate maker or are you like an edible maker?
I've always been an edible maker. So I didn't start in confection. I mean, listen, I made candies when I was little. I used to love being in the kitchen. And obviously that's like, I think for a lot of people, that's where their passion was started, was when they were young and like making cookies for their friends or yeah. whatever it was. I was particularly interested in sugar and I have a wicked sweet tooth. Uh-huh. So I would just make it for myself. But when I got into cannabis, like when I started making the chocolates and doing all of that, it was always with cannabis in it. It's not like I went and studied in Paris. I just was...
Well, but you worked at See's Candies.
I mean, I ate a lot of See's Candy. Yeah, I mean, experimenting at home, practicing different recipes, looking at things that were available in cookbooks and online, and then, you know, really teaching myself about sugar and what to look for with bubbles. You know, you learn a lot over 10 years mm-hmm. of doing a recipe over yeah. and over and over again. So
what years were you in high school?
I was in high school. I graduated in 2004. I have to like sing the chant in my head from our you know, it's so bad I'm not gonna do it to remember. Yeah, and then I went to junior college for what, 3 years?
Okay.
I took a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was taking care of my grandma at the same time. It was, you know,
a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot going on. And then I got into all of the UCs I applied to, which was great. And yeah. I chose Berkeley.
Of course. You have the choice.
I mean, I don't know. I almost went to UCLA because I thought Los Angeles was like this really fun city mm-hmm. and there would be a lot to do. And, mm-hmm. But When I toured the campus up at Berkeley, it just made a lot of sense.
Well, and I think Berkeley is a lot more manageable, especially for a young person.
That's kind of how I felt. I was like, oh, I feel like Los Angeles will like swallow me whole.
Yeah.
And so Berkeley felt safe, but like I was taking the step in the right direction. And it just gave me so much opportunity. It introduced me to slow food. It introduced me to Chez Panisse.
You're part of that whole crew. You know Alice Waters.
Yeah. I mean, that was really just manifestation, I guess. You know, I moved to North Berkeley.
That's the most Berkeley thing.
I mean, I found this really cool room in a old Berkeley Victorian house on Walnut Street. So across from the original Pete's Coffee, and then Chez Panisse was around the corner. And my roommate, Joyce Sellers, was Alice's assistant before her next assistant, Varun Mehra, who is my best friend. Mm-hmm. And so, I became friends with her daughter. And then being a part of, I think in that time, the Bay Area wasn't as saturated as it is now.
Right.
And like chefs could really be experimental. And like, you know, Danny Bowen could go into the Chinese grocery store in the Mission and do Mission Burger and make burgers and then go into Mission Street Food. And there were a lot of pop-ups and there still are, but I think it's moving more to the East Bay. Sorry, I'm like talking like food. What's happening?
It is a food podcast. That's totally fair. And you did something with Danny Bowen, right? A project or?
I used to just work for him. Like, okay. I would do his, like, you know, kind of help him do his PR almost. And when he opened in New York in Lower East Side, I just was there to help him open that and like coordinate things, you know, flirt with the firemen mm-hmm. who were trying to shut it down.
That's important. Very important.
You know, just gotta.
Yeah.
I was there for support.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, I used to bake pies when he would do this pop-up. But yeah, I've just been kind of plugged into the Bay Area scene. And then I moved to Los Angeles. And all throughout this, I was making the chocolates, but it wasn't something I could be like public about because the industry was still very gray.
Yeah.
You know, and it's still gray now.
Mm-hmm.
Federal government.
Right.
It's not legal. So actually with the show, they don't win any prizes. They just have like these experiential like rewards, you know?
Yeah.
And that's partially because if they were to give anything of monetary value, the federal government has to become like get involved. So yeah, there's restrictions for the cannabis industry that you don't even think about.
Yeah.
And definitely producing a cannabis cooking show, it has a lot of these like legal
issues you have to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not just a California production. They want to air it everywhere.
It's aired everywhere. But yeah, I mean, that's the point, is to kind of move this conversation forward and to get people thinking about eating it and how they can incorporate it into their food, because it has so many benefits, just not just recreationally to have fun, but also just for like pain management and mm-hmm. just very well documented.
Yeah. No, and I think that's totally the way to go at it, is talking about pain management, because I think that that's something, it's a more practical application. Mm-hmm. And also, you're talking to older people.
Yeah.
The ones who are a little bit more hesitant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really good to be pragmatic. Actually, I read an interview that you did where you talked about the Republicans who are like, don't touch my money, Republicans.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that is so right. Like, get those guys on our side.
Well, they are. I mean, they're coming over. And also when people see that it can help their children, they're like, oh, I need this. Why is this not available? And there's a lot of power behind that when you can show proof that it helps with pain.
Yeah.
And pain is such a big... you know, it's a big topic for mm-hmm. sleep as well.
Yeah.
How do I sleep more? Okay, eat an edible.
Yeah.
Call me tomorrow.
Yeah, seriously. You guys, it's so simple if you just chill out for a second.
Just relax a little bit.
Yeah.
And allow yourself to relax. And, you know, I think that's doses are really big point on the show. Like, how many milligrams did you put in this dish? We have to eat 8 rounds of... Yeah.
I'm like falling over just thinking about that.
Yeah, it's and then you're smoking all day and it's like, what are you going to say? No, I'm not going to hit that pipe, George Clinton. Yes, I'm going to.
You just have to be neighborly. Yeah. So you kind of began your education with this in high school. And so were you putting cannabis in chocolates that you made in high school?
In high school, I was just smoking weed.
Got it.
Okay. And it wasn't like, I didn't get into edibles. My first edible that I made was 420, I think, when I was in junior college. So mm-hmm. in that in-between time, mm-hmm. In Santa Cruz, like up in the hills in Santa Cruz, I made an apple pie. Mm-hmm. And I put, I don't know, they just gave me a jar of weed butter. I don't know how much was in it.
Okay.
I made this pie from scratch, just like on a whim because I was stoned. And mm-hmm. that's what you do. And it was really good, but I was... It was like 3 days before I didn't have that buzz throughout my body.
So there was a lot of weed in that.
Yeah,
butter.
Definitely.
So I feel like there's that kind of actually kind of mirrors a lot of people's trajectory with marijuana, where like when you're in high school and you're in college, you're like, oh yeah, there's brownies. Like I know that there's weed brownies and you like put weed and stuff. And then
right.
as maybe if it's something that becomes an interest of yours, you start figuring out that you put it in the fat.
Right.
Whether it's butter or oil or whatever, and then you use that right. as the ingredient mm-hmm. and it's more effective. And now you can just buy food products with cannabis in it, which I think is not just because of capitalism that like people have been figuring out how to sell cannabis, but what you referred to before is the dosing.
Right.
And if you're selling it on the gray to white market these days,
gray market.
Yeah. Then like the rules about dosing are getting pretty strict, right?
Right. So it's lab tested. There's a required dose, no more than 10 milligrams per piece, 100 milligrams per item package that you're buying. And it can't have, say you make a batch and you send it to the lab and it's supposed to be 10 milligrams and it's 11 mm-hmm. or even 9. There's a 10% margin that you can be off by. So if you're off by more than that, you have to either fix it or destroy your product, like, pay to destroy your product.
Would you have to, would you have to destroy just that box of chocolates that they tested from? Or how much would you have to destroy?
No, the whole batch, all of it.
Everything that you've made.
Yeah.
That would be a bummer.
Yeah, welcome. That's why, it's this is all relatively new with the government. And mm-hmm. so I think a lot of businesses are finding like, what are the best ways to do this to be able to not have so many returns? You know, like, okay, if you do a chocolate bar, you can at least melt that down again and start over.
Okay.
Whereas with the confection, like I have to hit it every time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love it.
And you recently partnered with a bigger company to make that part move more smoothly, right?
Right, I'll work with, and that's become more complicated with 5032B, which is a regulation on white labeling. And so there's like some, it's still getting sorted.
What's white labeling?
Well, white labeling is when you go to a manufacturer and you have them make your recipe for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's more so that white labeling, like co-manufacturing is a better word.
Okay.
But it does kind of encompass that, both of those, where if you don't have a license, you can't work with somebody who has a license, right? So I, as a business, I don't have a license because I just don't have millions of dollars.
Right. How about that?
So, you know, what a lot of brands want to do, and I think a lot of, you know, even if you're a celebrity and you just want to get into the industry, you don't necessarily want to have to go out and get a license mm-hmm. or have a building. You'd like to just go to a manufacturer and have them make a recipe for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it's a little bit more complicated because I'd like to stay artisanal and I'm so attached to my recipe.
Yeah.
But that's why DeFonce is a company that I've been working with mm-hmm. to like keep that artisanal approach to it and be able to hit all of the marks as far as dosing and flavor and
yeah.
have it taste good.
Yeah.
So, and scale.
Right, right. All of those things.
It's not like a normal business where you would just go out, you'd get a space, you know, you'd start making chocolates on a small scale, and then hopefully you'd get so popular you'd outgrow that space, and then you'd grow into a bigger space. Like, you have to be pretty big already to be in the industry.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So there's a high barrier to entry,
yeah,
you think?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. How did you decide on 10 milligrams per chocolate?
I mean, I think that the government kind of decided that. I always did a light dose, though. But before, I used to do 25 milligrams, and that was my best seller.
Really?
Yes.
That's so
for
much.
The medical industry.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, for patients who are coming in and they are using it for pain management, they're taking a chocolate every single night. It's not kind of like this fun thing to do every once in a while. They need it to sleep. They need it to, you know, not feel pain.
Yeah.
So, you know, the chocolate part of it was just like this extra, you know, I don't want to say it, but it's like a spoonful of sugar. They need it.
Sure. Mary Poppins was right.
And she was totally right.
Yeah. So, but you're saying that, like, is it like a chocolate that has to be 10 milligrams? Because the mints that I take are 5 milligrams.
It doesn't have to be. It okay. can be less than.
Okay.
It just can't be more. But you have to think, okay, this is how also, like, you know, the Sacklers, is that the family with the, yeah.
With the OxyContin.
This is how mm-hmm. they think. People are like, oh, they made the dose higher. It's like, well, of course they made the dose higher because it costs the same to make that pill, right? It always costs the same. But if you make a higher dose, you can charge more. Whoa. And people get, I mean, this is not how I think of it, you know, as far as addiction, but, you know, a higher dose, you get more easily addicted to it.
Yeah.
So with this, it's like, it's kind of the same logic of that, of any business where the higher the dose, you can charge more.
Yeah.
But it doesn't cost you that much more to add it. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like the bottle, the pill itself, it's just all about COGS.
That makes a lot of sense.
But then now with the recreational market,
yeah.
I would say it's a lower dose that people are going after because you might not be used to taking 10 milligrams.
Right. I feel like 10 milligrams for me personally would make me straight up high.
For me,
goofy high.
Right. So you need like more like 2, which I would say is a good starting dose for
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that 10 is too high for a lot of people who aren't used to eating edibles.
Yes.
But if your tolerance is that high, I meet some people who are teeny tiny and they can eat 100 milligrams and they're fine. You just don't know.
Yeah. It's the tolerance, right? And by the mm-hmm. way, 100 milligrams, like, well, that's a lot.
People can do it. They won't even feel anything. I'll be like, what?
Yeah.
How can you do that? Even when we were filming, that would be, I mean, we were eating 30 to 40 milligrams a day.
I think that I once, I'm going to out myself as pretty stupid. I once accidentally took like 45
yeah,
milligrams.
Yeah, that's intense.
I thought I was going to die, really and truly. You know, the thing is, though, I had the presence of mind to know that I wasn't going to die. Like, you know how you hear stories of people calling an ambulance because
right.
they think they're dying? So I was like, I think I'm dying, but I think that because I'm higher than I've ever been in my life.
That's,
don't call an ambulance.
That's the wisdom that's the mantra you have to tell yourself
yeah.
when you're in that position. It's like, everything is okay. I need to just eat something and relax and like try and absorb it with other food,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
would that have worked? I forgot.
I always think that eating when you are too high is a way to kind of relax your body, you know, it just kind of gets other things into your system that will kind of dilute that effect.
Yeah.
So I would just always eat something.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. Just eat something.
And a fun tip too.
Yeah. You put something funny on TV, mm-hmm. you know, watch something really funny and then eat some food. And that's the best thing that you can do. I mean, if you really want to call an ambulance though, I mean.
Well, not with the way that health insurance is in the
yeah. United States. It's probably easier to just eat something.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch something funny on television. Watch yeah. Bon Appetit.
Yeah, there you go.
For when you're too high.
And be like, it's okay. Look at all these other people who are as high
We're
as
just
me.
As
like,
high as you yeah. are. Don't worry. We're here with you. We'll ride it out together.
So talking about like the history of edibles in the United States, I have this thing about Alice B. Toklas, mm-hmm. where I think that she apparently inadvertently made it so much more mainstream because she wrote that memoir / cookbook that was published in 1954. And it had this hashish brownie, right. is what she called it, which I actually found an audio clip from 1964 of her talking about it.
Oh, amazing.
And she definitely didn't know the difference between like hashish and cannabis. And she was saying that in Europe you get sativa, but in America you get indica, or maybe it was the other way around.
Yeah, that makes, Yeah. I'd have to listen to it.
I can actually play part of it right now.
The recipe for hashish fudge was given me by Brian Geisen, which anyone could wish up on a rainy day. This is the food of paradise, of Baudelaire's artificial paradise. It might provide an entertaining refreshment for a ladies' bridge club or a chapter meeting of the DAR.
Her accent is that totally old school patrician mid-Atlantic accent, even though she was from San Francisco, that we never hear anymore. She sounds like someone's regal great-grandmother. Uh-huh. Sometimes she's hard to understand, but she literally says, refreshment for ladies' bridge club or chapter meeting of the DAR, which is Daughters of the American Revolution.
Yes.
So she's talking about the fanciest ladies' groups that you could possibly go to. And I have this feeling that like a lot of ladies, like even though like she was a bohemian lesbian, they were still like, oh, interesting.
Like that they were eating hashish fudge?
I kind of have this feeling that she a little bit mainstreamed hashish or cannabis, you know, people not knowing the difference,
right,
necessarily.
Right.
And I kind of love her for it because in the clip when she's like, I had no idea.
She probably didn't. I mean, maybe it was something that was more casual back then that people didn't talk about publicly, but was going on in these ladies' bridge clubs. That would make a lot of sense.
Totally, especially because she talks about how lots of... There's a point where I kind of think she's getting cute when she's like, you might have it growing in your window box and not even know it. Like, you plant your window boxes. You
right.
know what you put in them.
You know. Well, but I think it's more so that it's discreet. It can be as
right?
discreet
yes.
as... And that's how I always looked at it that way, too. It's like, oh, it doesn't have to be so blatant. It doesn't have to be so in your face. It could be something that's very discreet and beautiful and, you know, hidden in a chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Or...
You don't have to wear tie-dye when you're consuming cannabis.
No, you don't. I think that, you know, this with the show, having chefs come on and show... Mm-hmm. How versatile it is as an ingredient, that really just, for me personally, it blew my mind. It was like, yes, Louis Tickerham just like making it into some crazy salad dressing that I'd, you know, never
He's
had.
Been on this show too. He would be good at that.
Oh my gosh. His palate is crazy.
Yeah.
He's really talented chef.
His food is good and he mm-hmm. seems like someone who would enjoy that.
Yeah.
So with cooking shows, it's like really aspirational and people aren't necessarily trying to replicate the recipes.
A lot of people post and they're like, oh, bon appetit, I got this idea, you know, and the cookbook came out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wanted to cook the recipes from it. So I think the food should always feel important and feel like, you know, it's doing something innovative with cannabis.
I feel like about, I don't know, 10 years ago when legalization in California was sort of looming.
Looming. Yeah, it was.
That there was this movement towards trying to make, you know, selling in the dispensaries, mm-hmm. which were just medical at the time, like vats of pasta sauce and that sort of thing that were infused with cannabis. And I feel like now, because we've learned more about like tinctures and stuff like that, that a lot of the things that are available in the dispensaries in terms of edibles really are like the sweet treats, like the kind that you make.
Well, I think it's because the shelf life is so good.
Ah.
And it's, and I mean, that's what I learned from working at See's Candy.
I just like, I love See's Candy so much.
Me too.
I think they're so good. You do too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I still to this day, I'm like, that's so good. I was in the mall a couple months ago with the guy I was dating and I was like, let's stop at See's. And
you
he made
your
fun
free
of
chocolate.
Me.
What?
And I dumped him.
And you dumped him.
So.
You walked away.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. They give you free samples just for like looking at them.
You can ask for as many as you want.
Are you serious?
Yes. I mean, they'll give you a dirty look if you ask for a certain amount, but technically they can't. So you can eat as many as you want when you work there.
Okay.
But you can't take any home because that's stealing. But okay. There was, you know, like one of the little old ladies got fired because she, no. Yes, because she would take one home every night with her and have it.
Oh,
I get
sees.
It. I get it. Sees. You have a policy. You know what? That's part of the whole company. You yeah. gotta, that's, you know, get, buy your chocolate. I used to buy them and take them home. It was so bad. I don't know if it was on Instagram or via Twitter, but they like got in touch with me and they're like, do you want us to send you a box? And I was like, yes. They're like, what's your favorite?
Oh my God. I would die.
Oh yeah.
I want to be sponsored by C's.
Right? Can you imagine? Just no, that'd be dangerous.
Did you ever get sick of them, of yes. the chocolates while you were working?
But then I'd go and eat something like savory and salty and I'd forget about my sickness the next day and I'd just go back and do it all over again.
I wonder if there's something about working with food when like you're a teenager or a young adult that gives you like almost a Pavlovian response. In college, I worked in this cafe that put basil in all their sandwiches. Mm. I had never thought about it before. And now when I smell basil, even though like I love Vietnamese food and the other ways that basil is used, I'm still like remembering those sandwiches and how good they were. It's like an early exposure to food that's not your mom's.
Right. That was Thai food for me. The first time I had Thai food, I was like, what?
Really?
I was like blown away. I was like, why has my mom been holding like holding this out from like I should have had this before.
That's awesome.
We just ate a lot of Italian.
Mm-hmm. Do you like spicy?
I love spicy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then chocolate's good after spicy food.
Definitely. It's good with spice too. Yeah. A little bit of heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know those like little chili chocolates that some people do. Mm-hmm. Those are an interesting flavor combo. Yeah. For sure.
I think you like to have different things going on in your mouth, mm-hmm. you know, with texture, with heat. You know.
Do you have four kinds of chocolates that you're manufacturing right now?
Well, right now it's kind of all in transition, working, mm-hmm. trying to figure out with DeFonse. But before when I was doing it under the medical market, mm-hmm. it was the cinnamon toffee, fleur de sel caramel, peanut butter creams, and I would do a vegan, coconut vegan caramel.
Okay. So was your process for choosing the flavors different than like a chocolate maker who's not including cannabis as an ingredient? Were there other things you had to consider?
I mean, to a certain extent, yes. Like with the first caramel, I just knew I was using cold water hash at the time.
Okay.
And so I knew with that flavor, that those floral notes, it would work really well in a caramel with vanilla. It just does.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of why I thought to do a salted caramel. Mm-hmm. And also at the time, like everyone was crazy about
salted caramel.
Salted yeah. everything. Yeah. Like put, you know, Maldon on it, just put it on there.
Yeah.
So, which I love. I like a salty sweet. And then with the cinnamon toffee, you know, that was more wanting crunch. And I think the cinnamon balances out that cannabis flavor in a way that it's not so overpowering with your palate because mm-hmm. there's so much butter in toffee that mm-hmm. it kind of like washes over your whole tongue.
Yeah.
So you need to have other things going on other than just cannabis and butter.
Yeah.
But now it's distillate. So when you don't use hash, you're distilling it down further to the cannabinoids, just trying to get to those pure cannabinoids, THC, CBD, etc.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the flavor is gone. It's very minimal.
Interesting.
So you can kind of put it in anything.
So is that another new development as the technology improves and that sort of thing, is that you're Definitely. Getting less of the flavor in the
of
food?
Of cannabis, yeah. It's not even an issue. If you don't want to have it, you don't have to have any flavor.
Oh.
Yeah.
I do know that I have a very sensitive palate, but I feel like lots of times, and again, I mostly do mints and sometimes gummies, so I don't think I've done chocolate. I feel like I can still taste it a little bit. Is that on purpose on
the manufacturer? It depends on what they're using.
Okay.
So yeah, distillate will be more expensive than say if you're using a cold water hash or if you're using more basic concentrate. Mm-hmm. So the more clear that you take it, the more expensive it gets because okay. they do further processes on it like winterization. And yeah, I just went to a lab. It was crazy. I was like, oh, this is so cool. I don't understand totally. I'm trying.
Well, so cinnamon toffee seems like a flavor combo that you don't see every day.
No, it's not. But I love cinnamon. It's so yummy.
Yeah.
I think if it's just toffee, it's still good, but there needs to be something that makes it a little bit extra. So whether that's salt or whether that's coconut or, you know, with the peanut butter creams, though, I kept those really classic. Mm-hmm. Other than a lot of like honey I like in them. Okay. So the difference between going from artisanal to like bigger, because now it's like distribution, you have to get it lab tested. You can't really be small anymore in the business, because like if it costs $150 a lab test, mm-hmm. rough estimate, mm-hmm. If you do a small batch,
yeah, that really cuts into your profit. Yeah,
you can't do it.
This is so interesting, because I think when as marijuana becomes more legal across the country, people talk about like the green rush, but maybe it's hard for independent producers to like make a killing off of this.
Well, yeah, I think that you have to go in with a lot of
capital.
And that's why people talk about how the industry is kind of not fair to the people who've been negatively impacted by the war on drugs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, equity programs are great. I recently read that a lot of money that was supposed to go to the equity program in LA was put into the police department. But
cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's it needs some work.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Because the people who in like the mainstream business who have ease of getting capital are the same people now in this new market that have, you know, the mm-hmm. same ease. And mm-hmm. the people who find it to be difficult to get capital, like women.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And people who have criminal charges.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I know all that stuff is so weird. Like if you are a felon, you can't open a weed shop. But a lot of people have got felony weed charges. Like it's.
Well, I think there are definitely equity programs for that. Like in Oakland, you know, if you have a charge that was from the war on drugs, you can use that to have priority in getting a license. But you still need to be able to raise capital to open that business.
Right.
So it's like trying to find, you know, I think that there needs to be programs that really help. And there are people who are making a lot of changes, a lot of mm-hmm. strides. You know, Supernova Women out of Oakland, Sunshine Lencho is really cool. She provides like legal help, and she's helped Oakland to kind of help write their equity program up there.
Yeah. So. And I think maybe a lot of people would think like it's a silly program, but I think it's really important, because again,
starts the conversation,
like, yes,
needs
exactly.
to happen.
Yeah,
we and need to be doing something.
Yeah,
I think we can be doing more, but you know, as with everything, we can always be doing.
God, seriously, there's a lot going on in this country right now.
It's a lot going on, and it's an entirely new industry that's being created right now. And California is such a huge, huge market,
right?
So,
right.
It's a big state.
Yeah, there's a lot of us and we're like notoriously open-minded.
For the most part.
Mm-hmm. Except for Orange County.
Yeah. Exactly.
So tell me what you think about this. There's a restaurant in Los Angeles that's been around for a while now. And when it opened, it was definitely like upscale and like the food was interesting. It was getting a lot of attention, both from like people who like flashy restaurants and from people who are serious about food. And then like the opening chef like went to a different restaurant, and the restaurant's still open, but it doesn't get the same attention that it once did. And I recently looked at the menu online and I was like, oh, the food still sounds really good. And then at the bottom of the menu, it said add 10 milligrams of CBD to any dish for $15 or whatever it was. What's your first opinion of that?
I don't know. It would depend on the CBD. There's just like a lot of information that's lacking. I think it's a buzzword right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always kind of shied away from being like, this has CBD in it, because I don't have enough research and I'm not an expert in CBD. I can tell you that my chocolates will get you high. You know, I can tell you they will help you fall asleep, uh-huh. You know, et cetera, because I have, you know, I have basically market research, 10 years of market research of right. what that does. But, you know, this restaurant putting it on their menu, I mean, I think it's good for pushing the conversation forward, and mm-hmm. CBD is a really good way to get people to start thinking about cannabis mm-hmm. from not just this like stoner perception. I think there needs to be more information provided than just like, here, I'll put a scoop of CBD on, sprinkle it on.
I mean, it seems so thoughtless.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's what hopefully people will want to do more research and really figure out like, oh, how can I use this to improve my life? How can I use this to relax, to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it bummed me out in this context because it's like a restaurant that does good food and they're just going to slop some oil on top of it without like there should be like a CBD sommelier.
Yeah. I think, you know, there are definitely like weed sommeliers that do that. But I think that, you know, with CBD, it's like, okay, if you want to use it kind of as a counter cocktail or mm-hmm. something like that. But 10 milligrams, you can take a lot of CBD.
You certainly can.
I don't know how much 10 milligrams is what that's really going to do for you.
Right.
And also like in combination, you know, all of the cannabinoids interact with our body. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, it's a lot more complex than just narrowing it down to this one. It's kind of like turmeric and curcumin, you know, like mm-hmm. being like, just take this. And they try to isolate it and it doesn't do the same thing because it's about the whole.
Yeah.
It's the whole plant medicine. That's kind of the same idea, at least in my mind. That's this how these, you know, the entourage effect, as they say, you know, is that the whole plant interacts with your body. So to have all of it, it has more benefits than just the THC or the CBD.
Right.
So like full plant spectrum.
Right. So is this, does this have to do why, so this might be related. If I have like, if there's a brand of mints that are 5 milligrams and they come in like obviously an Altoid knockoff of an Altoid box.
Right.
And they say like they're for relaxing and I take those and they really work for me. But say those are only available in Washington State, so I can't get them. So here in California, I find a product that's a 5 milligram Altoid knockoff box of mints for relaxing and they don't do anything for me. Is that because of the strain that the different companies use?
It's not the strain. It's the whatever the ingredient and their process. So whatever the process is in Washington is going to be different than whatever the company is here that you're using. They might be, who knows, if they're using hash, maybe they're not activating it, so they're not converting the THCA to THC. There are so many different variables for why it wouldn't work for you. But I think that for mints, you know, that's definitely, it's something that I'm exploring actually at the moment.
Really?
So yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Can I be one of your
guinea pigs?
Yeah.
I know.
Please.
I'll just bring everybody. I'm going to have so many mints. Yeah.
Seriously. A lot of volunteers.
Yes. Everybody wants to participate. That's been the biggest thing. It's like, I want to be a judge on the show. I want to do this. I will tell you, it takes a lot. You have to train to do that show.
I can only imagine.
Had to prep.
I mean, did you start like 2 months out and think, okay, I better start smoking more? Or how did you do it?
Yeah. A month before I started smoking just as much as I could every day.
Amazing.
And just because we shot the pilot, and after the pilot, I was like, oh, that's what this is going to be. Because you have ideas in your mind, but you're like, I can handle it. I've been doing this for years. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I've got this covered. And then you do it. I mean, even Be Real, we were all looking at each other like, okay.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
We're in for it. And we leaned on each other, you know?
Literally.
Yeah. Sometimes literally. Sometimes we just took little naps and
That's so funny. That's because
you just want to, when you smoke, you just want to take a nap. You just want to eat and then take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
But they do that in Italy. Riposare. You take your nap in the afternoon after you eat. We need to do that here.
God, I know. We need to like take not all notes, but a lot of notes from Italy.
A lot of notes from just like Europe in general. Just like kind of pull from here. We could be like Picasso. Just take a little bit. Take a little bit from everywhere.
Yeah.
Squeeze it out. Make
Why
it new.
Why not? Like we have people from all over the world. We should take all the best parts of all the cultures.
Hey, we're going to do this. We're going to take tequila. That's very American of us.
Yeah. Just take but the in best. The best way. We want naps and tequila and sushi. What?
That's so LA.
It is.
And weed.
Yes. That's a universal. Do you, I don't know if this is a silly question. Do you have a favorite strain? Is that a
no,
thing?
No, it's not a, it's not a silly question.
Okay.
I do. I mean, I have a lot of favorite strains. It just depends. Varietals.
Mm-hmm.
Fancy.
Mm-hmm. Are people calling them varietals now instead of strains?
Yeah, I mean, strain kind of has this, you think of disease when you think of strain, like what strain of...
That wouldn't have even occurred to me, but I get it. Yeah.
You know, like...
What strain of herpes? Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say HPV, but whatever.
All that junk stuff.
What strain of, which one you got? Oh, it's on your finger? You're all right. Just don't touch anywhere else. Yeah. I mean, so I think varietals is like what is used for other plants, and it's kind of seeing cannabis... You know, I think like a lot of plants, they get a bad rap and it's just like, why? And it's okay. So you can be addicted to caffeine, but you can't. Cannabis isn't okay.
I know.
So, let's see. Favorite right now. I mean, I was smoking Insane OG on the show, which I got really into. It's super heavy.
Okay.
And then Green Crack is like, I hate the name.
Right.
But it's a really good one. It's just like, it wakes you up.
Okay.
Keeps you going throughout the day, makes you sharp. And I mean, gelato. I like them. I don't like discriminate. Them. I like it all.
They're all your babies.
I'm open. I'm like, yes. And then I'll be like, this tastes so good. Thank you.
Awesome.
On to the next one.
That's so interesting.
You know, I just like to be open to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like
food.
That.
I taste every, I like there. I try to think of, before coming here, I was like, what's my favorite food? And I was like, I couldn't totally stick on one thing. I was like, oh, but I really love that, you know, that Indian sweet, that mentai, the fudgy one, the calicand. I'm like, oh, but what about, you know?
It is like food. You have different favorites for different situations and like even... what the weather is doing and
how I'm feeling when I'm on my period. It's like indica, like super, I want it as heavy as I can get it. And then edibles, just, I don't want to feel my body.
Ah.
I don't want to feel anything.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why with the Bridge Club, the women would get together and their moons were synced.
Yes.
And so they were sharing the hashish fudge to, you know, help with their communal cramps.
I love that theory so much. I love putting
Let's bring that back.
Yes. No, and putting that in a feminist context, like sisterhood. Like,
yeah.
I love it.
Mommy's
I love it.
A female flower, so you kill the men.
This is all so perfect.
Sorry.
I'm really enthusiastic about all of this. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this education.
Thank you about for
cannabis.
Having me. Yeah.
Where can people follow your adventures?
I'm on Instagram at Vanessa Marigold, like the flower, and on Twitter as the same name.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sugar Magnolia, blossoms blooming. It's all empty and I don't care.
So my baby down by the river,
knew she'd have to come up soon for dear.
Sweet blossom, come on under the willow. We can have high times if you look by. We can discover the wonders of nature,
rolling in the rushes down by the riverside. She's got everything.